these are all sort of disturbing echoes, given the fact that the Dream Machine has such an exotic and such a long history already of troubles. So that I just feel that they aren't over yet. And I would see the museum here, the Museum of Modern Art, the older one up there in the where you were at the Biennale, is very anxious to have a show in huge, great big rooms, but naturally they want to see 20 of them sparkling away and twinkling away, and I would like to see 20 of them sparkling away on huge, great big pictures, which I would have done to the purpose, but that would mean I don't even have a place to make such pictures, I haven't got the money to put into the materials, I haven't got anybody who's necessarily going to buy them when they're done, and so it looks like a fuck-up to me right now. And yet, to get this project through was one of the sole reasons that I accepted, or well, I guess cowardice being the principal reason, but the other reason to get these things done that I ever accepted the horrible mutilation that they made me in the hospital for my cancer thing, which I thought, you know, much better die or, you know, leave the room quietly or something. And Anthony, at that time, came galloping in and said, the name of the game is survival, and you've got too many things that you haven't got finished naming. A dozen. And of that half dozen, at any rate, I have gotten quite a few accomplished, such as getting the Third Mind published, which still wasn't even, it's in possibilities at that time, a couple of others like that. But the Dream Machine is still a very outstanding responsibility. And the man who has made them has spent, certainly advanced, put out, God knows, more than $25,000, but he doesn't really seem to care whether he gets it back right away or not. And he isn't. He's a very mysterious man who lives in a very mysterious sort of way. Carl Laszlo, he's quite well known, but his back is turned to Europe and to America. I mean, he's a Hungarian, and what he really sees is back to German place. In fact, the only machine that he sold to somebody who hadn't even seen one, but was delighted when he did see it, as a big collector in Germany. Very charming cat. It was something like about $10,000. Like £5,000, whatever. And of course, what the museum paid over here. They paid that much for the one which is much less, just a prototype really. In fact, it's a kind of homemade one that they've got over there. It's kind of, you know, fiddled away and put together with bits and pieces and kind of very much just a prototype. And they were very disturbed about owning it at all and very disturbed about showing it. Managed during the time that it was supposed to be on exhibit. It was fixed somehow or another so that it was almost always turned off, and nobody could find the key to the place where the man who had the electric light switch was supposed to turn it on, because it troubles them. And it began just the very minute they first put it together there and lit it up. There were three young technicians in there doing it, and this one cat, I said, you know, close your eyes. No, no, he said, I don't close my eyes in front of anything. I said, that's what it's, no, no, no. And then the other one, I said, no, he wouldn't have them. So the third one did, and he said, oh, I said, man, the whole museum is in here. You should have seen the sort of look on everybody's face at that moment, because it's perfectly true. One of the first series of visions that you get are enormous, like unlimited acreage of Delaunays and Vassarellis and all of those kind of abstract painters. That's what you see. It's just that bit, like as if it were paint material. You see this great thing circling around you and developing and changing like that. And that, like, you know, like the process sort of mysteriously troubles some people. So the Dream Machine less mysteriously troubles them a lot. There are some unfortunate people who don't see anything, and they usually turn out to be art critics or art dealers.